Hey, this is Todd. I've tried multiple times to record this. Something always seems to go wrong. I'm hoping this is the one. So here goes. I read a lot on Twitter when I can. I ran across this tweet the other day. I apologize. I can't find the original tweet, or I couldn't find it. My tweet search foo failed me. So I'm going to paraphrase it, but it was one that inspired discussion in that moment, and I thought it was interesting. So I thought I'd take a few minutes to talk about it. What the tweet said essentially was that the collection of traditional GM wisdom, such that it is, was based on a lot of bad ideas from Gygax and company, and therefore it ought to be re-examined. That's more or less what they said. Yeah, I know we definitely mentioned they, and I'm not sure if it was a man or woman, definitely mentioned Gygax by name, but he probably meant, you know, other early authors as well. I don't take exception with the conclusion. We should, of course, re-examine everything and all our knowledge. There should be no golden cows that are beyond examination and beyond looking at to see if there are better ways or different ways or, you know, whatever. I think that's obviously good and we should do that in all things. Where I found myself taking a little bit exception was this basically calling out of Gygax himself on the one thing, and the other one, this implication that this hasn't been a process that's been ongoing, as if this collection of GM wisdom is like some kind of 10 commandments that have been carved into stone and nobody has challenged them or tweaked them or changed them or done anything until now. And now we're finally going to take a look at these 10 commandments to see if they should still be commandments or whether they should be demoted or destroyed. And that's simply not the case. GM wisdom, GM conventions have been changing all through the history of the game. And the idea that somehow just now we're doing it or now we should do it is just, it's just ridiculous, right? It's a little bit almost arrogant to think that, oh, we in 2019 are now we're re-examining all these things that have been held as truths by these grognards, these other people who've been, you know, stuck in the Stone Age for so long. It's ridiculous. The other part I wanted to point out is maybe a little bit to be a defense of Gygax, and that is that, well, one, you know, Gygax's works, it's a lot like the Bible or some kind of religious text. Not that it is holy necessarily, or again, beyond examination, but merely that there's so much of it, and it's written over great swaths of time as ideas have changed, and the game has changed, and his impressions of the game and his ideas of how the game has changed. So you can find a lot of different things in there. And so it's almost like when people go into the Bible and they'll pull out passages that say, thou shalt always wear a beard. And then you look and 100 pages later, they pull out another one, thou shalt never wear a beard. And so you can have that similar effect where you can look through Gygax's works and you can pull out a lot of stuff. So part of that reexamination, you obviously take, you know, look for the context of what's being said. The other thing I want to say that I think a lot of the conventions that have been, in a sense, we've been rebelling against as a community over the last few years, you know, looking back at, say, OSR and the rise of a lot of the independent games that played by the Apocalypse and, you know, Torchbearer and Dungeon World and all this stuff and 5th edition and all these different ways we're looking at it, and this whole renaissance we're in actually has a lot to do with looking back, particularly looking at the effects of the OSR revolution or renaissance, whatever I've looked at, is that really when you go back and you look at particularly at the very earliest ideas of how to play the game, these are things that we're coming back to. It's not that these are bad ideas, is that a lot of these ideas that Gygax and Arneson and these guys were doing with back in the 70s and into the 80s were actually really good ideas, but in that sort of Renaissance example is that they were sort of lost or superseded or overshadowed by these broader trends in how people adapted and started playing the game. And as those trends took off and the game changed and content creators pivoted to, you know, seeing where the audience was going, and then we're going in that same direction and extending it and pushing it, the game moved away. And in essence, we had, if you want to look at it in some sense, a Dark Ages. And again, obviously, a lot's going to depend on your perspective. A lot of people really love what some people would look at and say that's kind of a down point of the game. But in any case, bit of a Dark Age in a sense, and now we're reemerging, we're synthesizing stuff from a first Golden Age, then some of the ideas that were good from that other age into a new reality. And now if we talk about the original game, we look at it in terms of what they were doing, that was really the open sandbox, the mega dungeon, right? You had Greyhawk, you had Blackmoor, you had City State of Invincible Overlord. As we moved into the 80s, we were getting more modules and adventures, and there was a certain convenience because when you get out of the beginnings of the hobby with war gamers and really that kind of hands-on building, you get into, you know, people who wanted to spend a lot of time on the building aspects, you get into a broader audience that want more off-the-shelf play. Well, I don't have time to create my kind of Greyhawk. Can I just buy a Greyhawk and do that? And then, yeah, here that is. But then it's like, well, I don't have time to do this stuff. Can I just buy some kind of mission? And of course, conventions you're going on, and there's that kind of organized place. So you can see kind of how modules came up. Now, starting really, I think, where the idea is that maybe I can't speak for the guy who made the Twitter, but the tweet on Twitter, the person who made the tweet on Twitter. But I think a lot of the ideas you associate with sort of the conventions that we're re-examining and finding wanting are really from the post or twilight of Gygax at TSR, the end of TSR. So you're talking really second edition and onward, which is the beginnings. I think a lot of people point the finger to the Dragonlance modules, I think in the late 80s. I think they might have been the end of first edition. They were very strict. They were very linear, very railroad in a sense, telling the sort of really defined story arc that you were kind of trapped in, or you would feel trapped if you didn't like it. If you liked it, you didn't really notice. But that sort of arc, that sort of adventure path became the impetus. I think it was very popular at the time, and it pushed the direction that the games were going. So, of course, if you see something popular, if you're looking at it, you're a game publisher, you're a module writer, you're an adventure writer, what are you going to do is they like Dragonlance, well, I can give them more of that. So you get more of those paths, more of those very, very strict defined narrative games. Now, a lot of people now really like narrative games, but I think they don't like them with a lot of the hang-ups that maybe that era of narrative games had, at least if you were playing out of the box, you know, adventure path modules. Of course, many people weren't. Many people were playing what they were playing. But I think when you look at the output of the time and maybe the more grand forces, that's what was happening. Now, you have people who still want the narrative part, but they're rebelling against the very strict, this is the way it is because this is the way it is, which would happen in those modules. You get in these situations where it's just pushing you in a direction and there's no reason outside the demands of the module for you to be doing that or for these other things to be doing that. And it kind of just is what it is. And it really led to a very strict sort of game. When you go back and you read the stuff that that Gygax was saying and Arneson and those guys, you will see back in the white box, Gygax saying, hey, if you want to have a player that plays a dragon, you work with the GM to make that happen. You know, whoa, that's great. That's the kind of freedom, the sort of rule of cool. Oh, your players want to do that, be flexible stuff that we would like. And the original game was supremely flexible. There were not a lot of rules. So there was a lot of leeway to do what you wanted. People were, this, the spells that we look at now as old classics were created by players who were playing back in the day. So you had all this freedom. You had a very rulings, not rules. I don't know if they ever said that back then, but certainly there weren't a lot of rules. So you had to rely on rulings. And in fact, one of the reasons that, you know, the DMG, I think, in 1E is such a bear, and it's a great book. I love the 1E DMG, and I've heard from some people who said they played it with all the rules in the 1E DMG. I tend to doubt it, but who am I to say? So maybe they did. I think if you're looking at where you look at it and you say, well, look at Gygax, all these bad ideas, because look at the 1E DMG. I think what happened with the DMG was simply that when you go back and you hear stories from the 70s and Dungeons and Dragons is taking off, people were calling Gygax's house saying, I got a player and they're swimming. How do I adjudicate that? And Gygax would ask them on the phone, well, how did you adjudicate it? Oh, I had them roll a constitution check, and that said how many minutes they could swim without getting tired. And he would say, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. You know, that's what I would have done. Good night. But there's only so long you want to do that before you feel like, man, I just need to take a bunch of these rules, a bunch of these edge cases that are coming up, and I just want to have one source of truth because we're doing more conventions, we're doing modules, there's a lot more groups, a lot more people playing. I want to have one source of truth so that you can walk into somebody else's game and not have to read a Bible of house rules to play. You can sit down. And so I think that coupled with the politics, which I'm not going to get into, but you can read about in Playing at the World and other literature on the subject, you get something like that. But that said, there are way more good ideas in here than bad ideas. And I think many people at the time, I was a kid when this played out, I can't even remember what rules the first games I played, I was young, with this were. As adults, I don't know if people were, again, how much they were playing, but I think if you were an adult and you had come from the white box and maybe you'd picked up Holmes or you were, you know, you picked up those and you've gotten to advanced because, ooh, it says advanced on it, so I should pick it up over what we've been playing. I think you were already in the culture of, I'm going to pick and choose what I'm going to use. And, oh, I like this, I'm going to like use that. I don't like this, so I'm not going to use that. I think that that's maybe the unspoken thing. Certainly, I spoke about it in earlier rules, but I think that's kind of the unspoken truth of the DMG is use what works and ignore what doesn't work. But outside that context, when you look at it now, it can look like, gosh, it's daunting with full of these just tons of rules that you just seem like would make the game impenetrable and ponderous. But I think when people are actually playing it, for the most part, it wasn't like that. But still, a lot more great ideas than bad. And I would suggest that a lot of the GM conventions that people find distasteful or they feel like need to be reexamined don't actually come from this era, and certainly not the era before this, the White Box and Holmes and Basic Experts about the same time, but more the sort of original D&D path. It's a lot of the rules in the Croft when you get into second edition and with all those source books, and third edition with the tons of content and the very, very strict narrative style adventures. And I don't even blame the people who are doing it. I don't blame the post Gygax people at TSR and then Wizards for doing this stuff, because you know what? It was just as much our fault as an audience as anybody else's fault. They were giving us what we wanted. Now, I talked about in other videos how much I love loot for XP and how much I miss the fact that it was gone. But you know what? People love killing things. Murder hoboing isn't new. It's not some fifth edition invention going on forever. And if you're a game designer and you say, wow, people love killing things, then you say, well, how can we just reward people for the stuff they really love to do? So let's just tie XP to killing things because people love killing things, right? But that has unintended consequences. I'm not going to get into that now, but that's just how it goes. So when you see a Dragonlance comes along and you see, wow, this really strict narrative, very linear game is going gangbusters, you want to make more of it, and people do more of it. And then what you end up happening is you have a whole generation of players and GMs that cut their teeth on very strict linear narratives. So what kind of games do they start to run? If they weren't running games before, if they didn't go off on their own and they stuck with that, well, you're going to get a lot of very strict narrative, railroady kind of games. And again, same thing. When you start putting out source books and you know that you're looking at that as a means of revenue and they're selling, and you want to make more source books, and you end up drowning in source books and all the cruft that comes with those source books. And then you get, of course, but you get people who that's the game of their youth and that's what they love, and they still love all the source books, right? There's still people playing 3.x or Pathfinder 1, you know, it's Inheritors. I think there are still people playing, you know, 2.0, AD&D 2, and all the different source books for that. So everything's happening because the hobby is evolving. And it isn't that there are rules set in stone somewhere that, you know, we're the ones that are smart enough to re-examine them when everyone else just took them for granted. No. The game's been changing. Some things we're going to find from ye olden times work now for our current mentality. Some things from the more recent past don't. 10 years from now, people will be looking at what we did and say, gosh, why? Maybe there'll be a swing back towards the very heavy narrative style, or maybe it'll be going in another direction and then we'll be re-examined. So just to end it, I feel like that tweet comes from a good place, because yes, there should be no sacred cows. Yes, we should be re-examining everything. Maybe it's just a lack of history knowledge of the game on behalf of that the person who made the tweet, really not looking at enough depth to see that, hey, it's not really Gygax's bad ideas. It's merely these ideas from over time. Yeah, some of the ideas might be Gygax, it might be bad, but I actually would suggest that a lot of the stuff that we're finding now, re-embracing, is actually some of those original ideas. And the stuff that we're putting away and saying, this is not really, maybe these aren't best practices, actually are from that post-Gygax time. But either way it goes, it's nobody's fault. It's nobody's bad idea. All these ideas were good in the time they were made. People were hungry for narrative games, so they got narrative games. And what that meant for GMs, when you need to have to, everybody have to stay on a narrative path, is, yeah, maybe you come a little bit more heavy-handed in your techniques because there's no alternatives. If you have to be on a very narrow, strict path, you have to wrangle everybody. You need to get them on that path. That leads to a heavy-handed approach. When you all of a sudden wind it up again and you want more wide open spaces and choices, then those heavy-handed approach doesn't work so well anymore and becomes more of a shackles to the player. So you can see that everything happens on an evolution. People are constantly examining and re-examining rules. There's lots of good ideas out there, good or bad. I would say in defense of Gygax, I think many more of his ideas were good than were bad, but they're all, everybody, Gygax, Arneson, everyone involved, up to Merles and everything, they're all ideas that are products of their time and their moment. Some of them are going to be good for us now and bad for us now, but maybe they were good for them then, and ideas that we hold now would not have been good at the time that they were playing, and in the future, some of our ideas will turn out to be bad. So yes, re-examine everything, but don't blame anybody. It's nobody's fault. The game has been evolving, so our ideas and our approaches evolve and go around and around in a big circle. I'm recording this on a Friday. Hopefully, it will go up on a Friday. So if it does, have a good weekend, and I will talk to you later.